Amen, amen. Church, can you give it up for this worship and this tech team? Man, they do an incredible job every single week. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, thank you. My name's Austin. I'm on the team here at the church. And I tell you what, I am really, really thankful to be a member of this church. I just got to spend a week back home where I'm from in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and just had an exceptional experience training some student missionaries from my alma mater that are going overseas, about 300 plus students going to 30 different countries. It's just an exceptional time. I've had the chance to do it probably 10 of the last 15 years. And while I was there, I was kind of uniquely aware at the same time of how much, in a very positive way, this local church here in Santa Monica has formed me and shaped me, not only in my belief, but also in my practice. And that's in large part to Trevor's leadership on Sunday mornings through his teaching and Trevor's leadership through pastoring and shepherding people. And so if you've kind of had that same sense that, man, this local church has really shaped me in a really, really positive way, can we just show Trevor and Amber some honor this morning? Thankful for you guys. It's very real. I'm very thankful for it. This morning is also a special morning because it's Mother's Day. Yay! And this church is full of moms. Older moms, moms in the middle, young moms, moms in the making, moms looking to be moms on the horizon. And this morning, we just want to celebrate them. And so if you're a mom in the room, can you just stand up for a moment? We are so thankful for you. If you're a mom, can you stand up? Can you, come on, don't be bad. Moms, thank you, thank you, thank you. The investment into your family's lives is not missed on us. And so we are thankful for you. On the way in, if you're a woman that's a part of the church, if you missed getting a bouquet on the way in, we want to encourage you, any woman on the way out, grab a bouquet from our church to you. We're thankful for you, and we want to honor you this morning. And so if you live on the west side and your mom doesn't live on the west side, make sure you give them a phone call. If your mom is here on the west side, make sure you stop by and visit them, go out to lunch with them, celebrate them, honor them. We are thankful for moms. So whether you've been here for 30 minutes this morning, I met, you know, even a family that's here from the Netherlands this morning, or you've been at this church for 30 years, we're simply a church with a vision of a Los Angeles in which every single person has been shaped and transformed by the life-changing power of the gospel. So there's three things we want to do really well. First is we just want to know Jesus. We want to make him the center of everything that we do, and we think that if we do that and we do that well, we can't help but to grow in our faith, our trust, our hope, our allegiance in him. And as we do that, he begins to shape us more and more into his image, becoming the kinds of people that go out into the world equipped to serve. And so, you know, as we talk about leaning into knowing Jesus, this morning we want to make a big deal out of Jesus. And when we look at the church calendar at large, we're kind of barreling towards Pentecost Sunday, which is next week, with tacos after service. And this morning we're looking at a letter. We've been in this letter for a couple of weeks, and we'll be it for several weeks after this, but we're looking at a letter written by one of the disciples that was with Jesus during his life, his death, his burial, his resurrection, and also present at Pentecost. And in this letter, he's writing to churches that are now living in this new reality of resurrection and Pentecost. And so we're in this 11-week 1 Peter series called Living Hope. And we begin with an introduction which calls to us, reminds us of the glorious reality of our living hope, that we've been called to be sanctified, to become more and more into the image of Christ. And over the next several weeks, we'll talk about kind of how does that actually play out? What does that mean for our day-to-day living? And so over the next several weeks, we'll talk about submission to authorities, the general community of faith, trials, and tribulations. It's this book, 1 Peter, in which he makes it really clear who he's writing to and why he's writing. He's writing to exiles, folks that are scattered throughout the world. And he's talking to them about how they ought to live and what they ought to expect given they have received a new birth, a new life into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This new birth, this new life was going to create a new life for them here and now. And so over the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about some of the things Peter talks about, which is submission. Submission to several kinds of authorities, but this week specifically, we're talking about submission to general authorities, but also submission to some of the bosses in our lives, if you will. And so we're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 through 25. So if you've got a paperback Bible or a smartphone or tablet on you, it's 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 to 25. And in this section, Peter is going to be talking about submission to government authorities, submission to God's authority, and submission to some boss authority, if you will. But I wanna start with this. Recently, I've been playing some pickup basketball at my local gym. I call it pickup basketball because I'm just trying to make sure I can still pick up my feet and run up and down the basketball court. And I happen to be on this team, and it's kind of one of these deals where, hey, if you win, you stay on the court. If you lose, you got to sub in five different folks. And I got on a team that was winning, and I quickly realized, oh, we got a guy on our team who's he likes to trash talk, if you will. He likes to speak out a lot. And we won our first game, and that was great, et cetera. And then a different five came on the court. And one of the guys I recognized, because he comes around quite a bit too, Christian dude, really good dude. And as soon as they got on the court, before we started playing, one of the guys on my team started talking some trash to this team and specifically to this guy. And he was kind of newer to this particular pickup game. And I just thought to myself, this is not going to end well for our team. Because one team had a trash talker and the other team had a real baller, if you will. And the longer the game went on, the more and more one of the guys on my team tried to get inside the other team's head. But man, this baller just kept quiet, kept putting up points, et cetera, et cetera. And then as, you know, we realized, hey, we're going to lose this game, this trash talker slowly started to get a little quieter and quieter. And then at the end when they lose and we had to exit the court for the next five, he kind of walked up to this guy who's a Christian dude, real quiet, but really good at basketball. I just gave him a handshake and said, hey, good game, good game. He was quiet the rest of the night. And when we lean into this section in 1 Peter, Peter's going to kind of ask the Christian churches to take on a similar disposition, that there are going to be people all around these churches that become trash talkers of the Christian community, and Peter wants the churches to not clap back, not argue back, not debate back, but just to live quiet, humble lives to earn their respect. Not to talk, but to bawl, if you will. As this begins this in verse 11, Peter says, "Beloved, I urge you again as sojourners and as exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul." There is, in fact, a war against your soul going on. Verse 12, watch this. Keep your conduct. Keep the way you act. Keep the way you carry yourself. Keep the way that you behave among the Gentiles honorable, stately, dignified, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they're actually going to see your good deeds, not hear your talk, not hear your arguments, not hear your debate. They're just going to see your good deeds, the way you're living in the world. And when they do, they won't help but to step back and to glorify God on the day of visitation when Christ returns. In fact, the next several verses are written in light of the fact of this reality that Christ will return. Nothing that Peter is going to write will make sense except if Christ returns. So verse 13, Peter leans into, with this being true, this is how you ought to live amongst the Gentiles, even as they speak evil of you. He says, this is how it works out. This is how it plays out. Submit yourselves, not for your sake, but submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every human authority. Not some of the authorities, not part of the authorities, but to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority, or to the governors, or to the president, or to the senators, or to the congresspeople, or to your local city mayor, who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong, but to commend those who do right. That word submit is it's a Greek word. It's kind of a military term, if you will, which means to arrange as if in troop divisions, really kind of organized in a military fashion under the command of a leader. In non-military use, it was a voluntary attitude of giving in, cooperating, assuming responsibility, and carrying a burden. In other words, this idea of submitting for Peter wasn't a passive activity, but a very dynamic activity. That whoever the government authorities were, it was to organize oneself to support, to come underneath, and to cooperate. He continues in verse 15. For it's God's will that by doing good you should silence your haters. Silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. In other words, Peter knew that the people in these Gentile cultures were going to speak slanderously against them. And the best way to silence them, the best way to bring them into the community of faith, the best way to make sure they glorified God on the day of visitation was just to act honorably in the world around them. Peter wants God's people to not talk about it, but to be about it. Not just to be hearers of the word and talkers of the word, but doers of the word. The surrounding culture at this time was going to accuse them of a lot of things. The surrounding culture was going to accuse the Christian church of being atheists because they only believed in one God as opposed to the entire pantheon of gods. The surrounding culture was going to accuse them of being cannibals because they were kind of getting word that in these meetings they were having, they were eating flesh and they were drinking blood. They were going to accuse them of being insurrectionists, saying Jesus is Lord, not Caesar is Lord. So they're going to slander these folks in public, but Peter calls them not to debate them, but to show them. Not to clap back, but to live honorably and with dignity among them. This isn't just a Peter idea, and Peter being one of the ones that was with Jesus during the entire duration of his ministry and in his resurrection. But Paul picks up on this in Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 7. It says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed. And those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad conduct. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. Verse 4, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on wrongdoers. Therefore, one must be in subjection, in submission, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of his conscience. In other words, it was this very, the earliest of earliest of earliest Christian ideas that God's people were to be the kinds of people that submitted to governing authorities. And this is why honoring our government is so important. It is our pathway to silencing those that would slander against us, that would talk poorly of us. So one of my questions is, where are you on your scale of submit to the governing authorities? For some of us, we love submitting to government authority. For some of us, it makes us cringe to submit to government authority. I do want to be a little careful with this idea of submit to every governing authority. However, it ought to be noted that all throughout church history, throughout Christian history, there's actually a pretty long-standing, robust tradition at times of civil disobedience from the Egyptian midwives in Egypt during the time of Moses, to the philosophy of Thomas Aquinas in the early church, to Dietrich Bonhoeffer during World War II, to the Underground Railroad here in America, to the civil rights movement and beyond. And so I just want to let you know, if you want to know when it's time to be civilly disobedient, email Trevor. But for Peter, the Christian life invites us to submit to governing authorities. That's point number one. Point number two, the Christian life actually invites us to submit to God's authority. This continues in verse 16. He says, live as free people. But don't use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Don't use your freedom as a license to do whatever you'd like. Instead, use your freedom to now become bond servants, slaves to God, free from sin, but now slaves to righteousness. Slaves is this idea of being devoted to another, to the disregard of their own interests. Verse 17, show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. You know, there is this idea at times in our Christian journey and in the culture around us that we confuse liberty and license. We confuse the idea that because we are free, we can now do whatever we would like. And Trevor gives this example often, the idea of becoming a guitar player. Many folks that have desired to play an instrument, a piano, guitar, the drums, etc. You have this dream of being the next Van Halen or the next great guitar player. And as soon as you get a guitar, you realize, oh, this is very difficult. And I have to treat this guitar in a particular kind of way if I'm going to make it do the kinds of things that I want it to do. You have to go through a pretty rigorous discipline of submission to chord shapes and scale formations and music theory. And once you submit yourselves to some of these governing attributes of music, if you will, you become the kind of person that is actually free to play the guitar, but you're only free because you've become a servant of learning how to play the guitar. And Peter's making a really similar point. He says, you're free, but this does not mean that you can do whatever you want to do. You're free from sin, so you can be free to righteousness. Freedom is not just freedom from something, it is also to something. John Milton is kind of this 1600s philosopher, if you will, kind of during the time of Locke and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And he's kind of writing about this idea of liberty and license. And he's not speaking in a theological sense. He wasn't quite the Orthodox Christian. But it's not as helpful here. He says, men are qualified for liberty and freedom in the exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains upon their own appetites. It is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters. See, Milton addressed the idea of genuine liberty or freedom over against the self-indulgence that he sometimes called license, a self-indulgence that inevitably leads to tyranny from within and tyranny from without. That is why in the Christian life, discipline is so important. Discipline is the key that actually makes us free. Jesus at one point will say, if you're truly my disciples, meaning if you're truly my disciplined ones, if you're truly my students, if you become truly the kind of person that puts into practice what I'm inviting you into, then you will know the truth, and then the truth will set you free. But for Jesus, it was only through discipline that we became free. There's that old phrase, he who is a slave to the compass has the freedom of the seas. So are you willing to constrain yourself, to enslave yourself to God's authority, that you might be able to avoid the tyranny from within, avoid the tyranny from without, and be a slave to God, a servant of righteousness? For Peter, the Christian life invites us to submit to God's authority. And this is the third and final point. The Christian life invites us to submit to our boss's authority. Verse 18 says, slaves, in the 21st century in America, in our context, you might use the word employees. Slaves, employees, in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters or your employers. Not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who stink. Also to those who are harsh and unjust. For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit? Notice Peter is kind of interested in you getting some credit here. How is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and you endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, watch this, this is commendable before God. This gets the smile of God on your life. Verse 21, to this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps of suffering. Verse 22, he committed no sin. Neither was deceit or slander found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, clap back, talk back, but continued, watch this, entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. There's something not great about suffering unjustly and under tyranny. It reminds me of older siblings. We've all had that moment. We were left alone at the house for the first time because we were at that age that our parents trusted us just enough to not burn the house down. And as they're gone on their 30-minute errand, there's that one point in which the older siblings realize, I think we can get our younger siblings to do our chores for us. Or I think we can get our younger siblings to allow us to throw the pillow in the pillow fight a little harder than our parents told us to. By the time the parents come home, sometimes the younger siblings are in tears. And they realize an injustice has taken place at the hands of their older siblings in the pillow fight or doing more chores than were assigned to them. But they couldn't take justice into their own hands. They had to wait for mom and dad to arrive. And when they would arrive, the parents would set everything straight. Peter's making a similar point. And I noted in the beginning that whenever Peter talks about submitting to governing authorities or submitting to the authorities over us, like our bosses, he does it in the context of the visitation of God back to earth. That there was going to be a moment that our unjust suffering was going to be made right. That Christ would return. That God would return and make everything right again. So you'll not always be treated rightly. You should not imagine that the Christian life means that everything is going to be rainbows and unicorns for you. At times you will be mistreated, unjustly treated, maybe even some harshness and bad leadership from your boss. But Peter says, submit to their authority. Endure it. Because the one who judges justly will one day make it all right. Again, this is Peter saying this, who was with Jesus during the life of his ministry and resurrection. But Paul picks up on this same theme in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 5 through 8. Paul says it this way, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters. Employees, obey your earthly employers with fear and trembling." And watch this, with a sincere heart, really desiring the good of your bummer of a boss, really desiring the good of the one who's being harsh with you. Honor them as you would Christ, verse 6, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not actually to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or he is free. Notice Peter and Paul are picking up on these similar themes of there's credit coming. There's the smile of God coming. There's the reward coming for those who will suffer unjustly under a bad boss. And so one of my questions for us this morning is, are you willing to suffer under harsh or unjust leadership? To serve them with a sincere heart. Now, I do want to make a note about this. I do recommend that if you are able to get out from underneath bad leadership and find good leadership, you ought to. Don't be a glutton for punishment if there is a way to get underneath good management, in the words of Colin Coward. And so I would encourage you that while there are seasons of being underneath bad bosses, in those seasons our disposition is to, with goodwill, serve them, honor them, seek their good. And at the same time, you may be sending out some resumes to some other organizations. But this is what the Christian life calls us to. The Christian life invites us to submit to the bosses in our lives and their authority. Now, I want to close this morning, so I'll invite the band back up as we kind of lean into some worship here. But this kind of moment, these verses remind us of the gospel. And Peter makes the gospel so clear at the end of it. And that is this, is that we are creatures created by God and now placed under authority, whether governing or the bosses in our lives. And this is the truth. We have not lived under authority well. We have not submitted always to God's governing authorities. We have not submitted to God's authority for our lives. We have oftentimes been critical, dismissive, or just real dishonoring of our bosses. But Christ, he's truly the one who was willing to suffer under Pontius Pilate. He was willing to drink the cup of crucifixion that God gave to him. And waiting 3 days for God to vindicate him, he waited for the God that would judge justly. What we have fully failed to do, Christ has fully completed. So through God's design, the one who knew no sin became sin, that we might become the righteousness of God. And that's why it can be said of Christ. And again, this is simply just 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 to 25. "To this you were called because Christ suffered for you, leaving an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds, you have been healed. For we all, like sheep, are straying.